Welcome to the Grace Community Church Sermons Podcast. Each week we share the sermon from this last week's service. We hope this sermon encourages and equips you on your journey to know and follow Jesus Christ. Let's listen in now.
Well, thank you, RJ. Thank you, worship team. And thank you, congregation. You know, I don't often thank the congregation, do I? But the church is a church, and I have the privilege of standing up here nearly every Sunday and sharing with you what God has given me to share with you. But the church wouldn't be the church without the people, right? That's the whole point and what we're called to. And the Sundays, I realize that Sundays are a day that are 21st century, you know, it's Americanized, it's when we celebrate, but Sundays are important. Gathering together is important. And we do that because, you know, the series we're going to look at is titled Jesus Every Day. And the point of this series is really as we examine ourselves and our walk with Christ and our relationship and everything going on as we get closer and closer to Easter Sunday. And on that Easter Sunday, we're going to look at accounts from Jesus's life, from Jesus taking that journey to the cross and realizing that we can learn so much about the purpose and person of Jesus by doing this. And the heart of Jesus was really simple. He came for every day. He didn't just come, and don't hear me wrong, dying on the cross was incredibly important to everything that we believe, as well as the resurrection. But he didn't die just to give us fire insurance. He died to call us to a life in him that involves him being a part of that every day. And that's the heart of Jesus. And so this week, as we kick this series off, I was thinking about, you know, the events of last weekend. And if you remember, we were supposed to host Matt Baird here, and he got sick, and I realized that he did everything he could to try to make that event happen. But we're going to host him again here in a couple months. Once we get that date nailed down, I'll let you know. But I mention that only because a song of his just really sticks out to me. It's called Keeper of My Heart. If you've not heard his music before, I encourage you to look him up on Spotify, Apple Music. He's got an independent album. He's with the band Spoken. But here's the tagline, or the part of the chorus that just rings true. It says, "You are forever. You are the one." He's singing to God. "Light in the darkness. You are the Son of God, Jesus. You are the keeper of my heart." And so my challenge for you as we walk this journey every day, he's not just a Sunday thing, is that your cry out to God? Is Jesus the keeper of your heart? You know, Jesus did not die, as I mentioned, not just to die and rise again, but to prepare a place for us. But he died and rose again so that we can live a life in him, not just in 60 plus minutes on a Sunday morning, but every single day. And so this series, we're going to kick off today, and the title of this series is When Assumptions Miss the Mark. And we're going to look at an account between a couple of disciples and Jesus, and we realize other disciples were there as well. But their assumptions about who Jesus was made very clear, and they missed the mark. And I dare say that our lives, when we live, sometimes our assumptions of Jesus, what church should be, or even what other people are, oftentimes miss the mark, right? When we see somebody and we see how they dress, we immediately got an assumption, don't we? When we see somebody and we look at who they are, maybe a different race, ethnicity than us, we sometimes jump to assumptions, don't we? We also believe that maybe because of who we know, this provides some preferential treatment to us. And that's what James and John were looking at. But it reminded me of a day long, long ago when I played basketball in a YMCA league. I don't even know how old, Dad. I was young, 9, 8, something like that. It was young. My dad was the coach. And so I assumed, right, that because my dad was the coach, that meant that I got some preferential treatment, right? What do you think? If you know my dad, what do you think? Probably not. Well, I thought that maybe I was pretty decent for my age. I thought I was going to play a few more minutes than everybody else. And You know, lo and behold, what happened was, is not only were the minutes pretty equal, but sometimes I played less, or at least that's my recollection of my time. Little did I know that now as a parent, having done that, there's rules. They say everyone plays the same, and that's kind of the idea, is everyone gets an exposure to that. And I didn't realize that, and so I was kind of probably frustrated at my dad at that point in life, as much as you can be at 8 years old. But I wonder if that's kind of how we live life sometimes. We think because we've said yes to Jesus, our assumptions are that maybe we have a leg up on other people. We're going to find in today's passage that yes, there are incredible promises in Jesus, but sometimes our assumptions miss the mark. Well, in Mark chapter 10, there were some assumptions made, and we'll get to the verses in just a minute. Thank you, though. You're right on the spot. Lisa does a great job back there. I want to say thank you. She's doing a great job today. But in Mark chapter 10, the assumptions were made, James and John, and if you read the other accounts in Matthew, I believe is where their mother was referenced, they believed they were going to receive some preferential treatment, maybe a favor. But before we read these verses, let us just pray that God would open our hearts to maybe some assumptions in our lives that we need to redirect. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we just praise you today for who you are. Today I ask you, God, open our hearts, open our ears and our minds to what you have for us. As we seek to follow Jesus more clearly every day, let this passage especially stir up things in our lives, Lord, that we need to come back to you for. Have your way with this time, and let it be your words and not mine. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Well, in Mark chapter 10, I just give you a quick synopsis leading up to this, because as I tell you, context is critical. You have to understand the context of what's going on. Jesus is teaching in Mark chapter 10, and they're nearing that point right before the triumphal entry, Palm Sunday. And so we set the scene here, and Jesus is teaching about a lot of things, marriage and divorce, children as a blessing, encountering a rich man and helping the rich man understand, even though he's kept all of these commands, he kind of missed the point. Where that goes about the desires of the heart and this idea that God has to be number one. And then immediately before this passage, this is critical, Jesus takes the 12 aside and again tells them what's going to happen. He's going to be handed over, beaten, and killed, and then rise again, betrayed by his own people, handed over and killed. And so this brings us to verse 35 here in Mark 10, verse 35. That's our context. So now we enter the fray and see this. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Verse 36, what do you want me to do for you? He asked. They replied, let one of us sit at your right hand and the other sit at your left hand in glory. So in these verses, we see really, really quickly, James and John, if you're following along in the bulletin, the first blank, it says assumptions expressed. So they express their assumptions. Now, if you had spent time with them, maybe you would have been able to figure this out. And before we beat up James and John too much, we realize that most of them at that point in time, Jews would have been looking for a conquering Messiah. So they believed there was going to be a man of power. That was what's going to take over. This Messiah was going to conquer Rome. And so they were going to have this opportunity to be in a place of power. So James and John asked a favor. What better time, right? Jesus just said, hey, they're going to beat me, they're going to kill me, and I'm going to raise again. And they're like, oh, now's the time. I don't get it. But let us keep in mind that are we really any different? You know, Jesus just remarked that this is what's going to happen. And so they say, well, certainly this is the time. And I can't help but think of times in my life when relatives have passed away. You know, it's not a good time to go through. There's never a good time to deal with it. But sometimes in the midst of all that, there's that one relative that's like, oh, they promised me X, Y, Z. And so right in the midst of this grief and this big moment in life, people come out of the woodworks, right? They want what they think is theirs. They have what? An assumption. And my wife's one side of the family, they kind of have a joke that they say amongst everybody. If you want something, grandma says, if you want something, put your name on it. And so if you look around her house before she moved into the assisted living, you might find sticky notes on the back of certain things. And it was, I think, a joke mostly, but I'm not really sure. But at any rate, that's kind of how we operate, right? We have assumptions based on what's going on. Well, in our personal application, as we think about this, what assumptions do we have about Jesus and our relationship with him? What are we really seeking? Because you see, when you start talking about hopes, dreams, and assumptions, we start to see really quickly where our mind is going and where our heart is at. And so I'm not saying that the disciples weren't committed. I believe they were, and it took a supernatural Jesus thing of dying on the cross and raising again before they really were launched out. But they definitely had some assumptions. Some of us even came here today with these wrong assumptions. And my prayer that is, as we continue through this, we'll see that Jesus is not surprised by our assumptions, and he's going to work through those. So your assumptions might be expressed. Continuing in verse 38, it says this. So Jesus says, "You don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" And of course, the disciples, in like true Peter fashion, go, "Yes, absolutely we can." They answered Jesus. And Jesus said to them, "You will drink and be baptized with the baptism I am being baptized with. But to sit on my right or my left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard about this, you know, the others, they became indignant with James and John. So first here we see that Jesus has addressed their assumptions. Their assumptions were expressed, and in these verses we see that their assumptions were exposed. These assumptions that certain things were going to happen, there becomes this tension starts to be revealed with assumptions, what they think is going to happen, and Jesus saying, "Listen, what you think is going to happen is not really what is going to happen, a reality of what's going to be different." James and John thought they got it. They were pretty quick to respond, right? Jesus asked that question and they said, "We can." Oh man, you got to wonder how decades later, when they look back at this time and think about this encounter with Jesus, they had to be shaking their head going, "Man, I had no idea." How many can relate to that idea? When you think you know where God is calling you, you're confident, God's calling you to take that step, and you say, "Yes, I can," and you take that step, and you quickly look around and go, "Uh-oh, I'm not sure what God called me to." Sometimes our assumptions can also be exposed. Jesus tells them, "Yes, well, you think you can, you're going to have the opportunity. You are going to drink from the cup." In other words, experience some of the same things that he experienced and be part of that baptism. You know, ever heard the phrase baptism by fire? You know, you get a new job and they just go, "Here you go," throw you in, and you're like sink or swim. You know, some people teach their kids to swim that way, not this guy. If you do, that's okay. I'm not criticizing you, but baptism by fire, right? Sometimes the only way to really learn is to what? Do what you think you are supposed to be doing and taking that step. You know, following Jesus is going to be hard. I wish I could tell you it wasn't. I wish I could tell you it was going to be easy, but I've read my Bible enough to know that Jesus said it would be hard. And just like the disciples who are in that moment where they thought, James and John, thought they knew what they were saying yes to, I'm encouraging you to pray through that. Now, I'm not telling you, don't hear me say, don't do things for God, because that's what you're called to do. I'm just telling you to be ready for what might be coming. Following Jesus is hard. The struggles are real, and the steps of faith that you are called to take are not always easy. In fact, I would edit my own notes and say very rarely are. It's just the way life goes. Hard times are part of it. You know, as I look back in my life and I think, I was just kind of revisiting this timeline in my mind as I was meeting virtually with Scott Ball. He was one of the lead guides for the Malfers group that helped us through strategic planning and different things. And so we're kind of reconnecting there. And we were just talking about things from the first time he came until there. And I just think if I'd have known in 2019 when I said, yeah, I want, God's calling me to be the pastor, that March of 2020 was going to happen, I might have said, you know what? I'm good. I want to stay right here. This is easy. I'd done education for 24 years. I knew the game. I knew how to do my job. It was easy. Most of the time, the expectations were very clearly communicated. And when I did what I was supposed to do, I got rewarded. I was pretty easy. And then God goes, that's not where I'm calling you. I think he's calling me into ministry. And even in that point, I didn't realize that I was called to be a pastor. If you had met me in high school, man, you'd have been like, that boy, there's never going to be a pastor. Never. It's just, he doesn't like getting up in front of people. He can't talk for more than 5 minutes at a time in front of people. Like, that was me in high school. And God, this is living proof that when God has a plan and he calls you, he equips you, but he also takes you through the hard times. The verses we read just a minute ago in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, I've come across these verses now. I've been studying and looking at them and just digesting them for a couple of weeks. They came up in my Bible reading plan, and it just hit me. The one commentator said a really good comment, and I'll share that in just a second. But these verses are from Paul, who's writing to the church in Corinth. And keep in mind, the church in Corinth had lots of issues. If you don't think so, just read 1 Corinthians and all the things he said. Listen, these have got to be addressed. You've got to come back to the gospel. And he gets to the end in chapter 15 and said, the gospel is Jesus, and that's where we must stay. Well, then he writes in this second letter, starting in verse 3, it says, praise be to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. Important word there at the end of there. It says, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. Verse 5 says, for just as the sufferings of Christ flow over into our lives, so also through Christ our comfort overflows. Now just hang on this verse there for a minute. Let me make a comment. So many times our prayers are, God, get me out of this situation. Right? And those aren't wrong prayers. I mean, nobody wants to go through hard times. When you're in the midst of a disease, when you're in the midst of losing a loved one, when you're in the midst of having a prodigal son, prodigal daughter, when you're in the midst of any of those things, it's perfectly natural to pray to God, yeah, God, if you could get me out of this situation. But I'm convinced, the longer and longer I look at these verses and live as a follower of Jesus, that it's in those moments of struggle, in those moments of suffering, it's in those moments of where we just go, God, I have no idea. That's when God goes, all right, now that's what I can work with. And it's through those moments, in verse 4, it tells us, sometimes we go through those moments of suffering. He brings us out the other side simply so that we can then turn around and enter into ministry with someone else who later is going through those sufferings. A friend of mine was sharing a story with me yesterday and was sharing something along these lines, as he had a friend who, basically, the friend essentially died in the hospital. He should have died. He had this sickness that should have killed him, but God resurrected him out of that, literally brought him back to life. And he often wondered, why in the world did God take me through this? Well, some two or three decades later, I can't remember the exact time, but it was a long period of time, he had the opportunity to go and minister to someone who was experiencing, their son was going through the same thing that he was going through. And he looked at my friend and told him, now I get it. See, it's in those moments when we go through tough times, it's in those moments when our assumptions are exposed for what they are, and we get to that moment and we go, God, I can't do this, rescue me. It's in those moments that I think we fully begin to realize who Jesus really is. See, our assumptions are expressed, they're exposed, and then finally the last few verses tell us how Jesus took their assumptions, eradicated them, and then redefined them. Picking up in verse 42, It says, Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Verse 43, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be a slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Understanding that when something's given as a ransom, it's a payment for. It's like in exchange for this life or this thing, you're giving something of great value for this to happen. And so Jesus is saying, listen, James and John, everybody else too, just so we're all hearing, you want to be in a place of prestige and power, understand this, that is the way of the world. You know, getting that place of importance, you think you have a place of power, it gives you special privilege. That's backwards of what following Jesus is all about. In fact, he says you must serve. Even the Son of God didn't come to serve, but to be, not to be served, but to serve. Boy, that would have been a Freudian slip there. I'm glad you guys are listening. You laugh, so that means you're still with me. In verse 42, Jesus rebukes them and says, this is not good. This is not like this. This is the way of the world. That's when he says the Gentiles lorded over them. He's just saying those that aren't following me essentially are like this. They lord it over them. They take this power, this prestige. You know, I've seen examples of this when like pastors take that to, they think they're specialer. Well, I'm proving my graduation at Marlington. Anyways, they're more special than the people just because I get to stand up here, and that is so far from the truth. And if you walked 15 minutes with me, you'd go, he is special, but not that kind of special. He's just trying to follow Jesus. And I hope that what exudes out of the leaders and the people of this church is that this level of humility, we understand that, listen, we're not any more special than you because we know Jesus and we want you to know him in this moment. In verse 42, when he rebukes them, he goes on in verse 43 to eradicate this idea. Listen, he says, what you think about your assumptions and prestige and place and position right now, just throw it all out. It's kind of like if you're formatting your hard drive on your computer. Now I'm going really super geeky on you. You just want to totally format the whole thing. Throw it out, start over, get a fresh installation of Jesus today. I don't know about you, but what are your assumptions about serving Jesus? And that's kind of the point, is as we think about this, as we think about the disciples, James and John, coming, and if you read the other account, it says their mom came, and you know, that's not a contradiction, it's just a different perspective there. The point is that the message came, and they wanted a place. They thought, they assumed that they deserved that, and Jesus is saying, listen, you missed the boat. What are your assumptions today about serving Jesus that maybe need to be eradicated and redefined? I don't know what they are. I don't know what you struggle with personally, but maybe it's just prestige. Maybe it's a place of authority. Maybe it's just, hey, I want to be recognized by the people of the church. Maybe it's just, hey, you know, whatever God is pressing on you right now, I encourage you to consider, what are your assumptions of serving Jesus, because we are called to something different. And in verse 44 and 45 again, it says, whoever wants to be first must be a slave of all, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. You know, Jesus says to follow him is what? To deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow him. That's what a disciple means. And so a disciple is, I'm trying to be like Jesus. So Jesus is saying here, listen, this is what my life is like. This is the standard. How are we struggling with that? I don't know. Understand this, that if you're following Jesus, I believe this with all my heart, that you are living a countercultural life. Never have a question. Someone goes, well, why would you do that for church? Or why would you, you know, give to the church? Or why would you give up your Sunday morning? Why would you do this? And so those assumptions start to come through. And so my hope for you is that you say, I'm following Jesus. I'm following Jesus. I'm trying to be countercultural. See, Jesus gave us this upside down paradigm that in order to lead like him, we needed to behave differently than the world. I just finished a book, which was really good. If you don't want to be challenged, don't read this book. But it's a really good book. It's called Lead Like Jesus. And there's one section in there that just really hit me too, that I just remembered. The second one is this. So many times as a leader or someone following Jesus, the reason why we don't do that is because we kind of do this thing called edging God out. We get this notion that we start to think that we've been following Jesus long enough that we got it figured out. And in the midst of this, sometimes this will exhibit itself in a couple of ways. One is in fear. I don't know if you've ever felt fear before you're about to do something for Jesus, or you think you've got an idea of where he's leading you, and you start to overthink it like I do, and you start to get nervous, so you start to say, okay, Jesus, you're not moving quite fast enough. I know where you want me to go, so I'm going to just do fill in the blank. In those moments, we start to realize that we are edging God out. And I think that this fits well with this idea of, what assumptions in our life are we edging God out? I'm not sure what it is for you, but I encourage you to spend some time in prayer. The second thing that stood out in this book to me was this idea of this pyramid. So they gave this idea that, listen, for a pyramid, for a power, like not power, but like who's in charge. If you guys are business people, or you know, even in a school, you understand this. So let's use a school example. So who's in charge at the school? Well, ultimately the voters in theory, but there's a school board, right? And there's a superintendent that kind of sits at the top. He's the one, and the financial officer, the treasurer. Those guys are ones that are enacting what the board is saying. Here's what we're trying to do. It slowly filters its way down. You've got building principals, maybe assistant principals, and you've got maybe lead teachers and custodians and all this. And so you've got this level of pyramid. And as you get closer to the bottom, there's more and more people, right? Those people are in the trenches. Those are the ones that probably have the direct contact with the students more often. So in theory, when they're setting a vision, the people at the top are clearly communicating that vision down, and the people that are, we'll say, serving or working for are trying to enact that vision where they're at, right? Does that make sense? So this power structure, this who's in charge kind of thing. Sometimes I call it the food chain, who eats who, who's in charge. But here's what Jesus said. He goes, while that is true in structure, we flip that upside down. And now, in fact, in serving, if I'm, as the person in charge, as the pastor, as the one who's allowed to think they're in charge, as the pastor, my goal is once that vision is set, then now I'm going to do everything, kind of flip everything upside down. I'm going to do everything I can to serve everybody that is quote unquote above me. So I'm going to try to serve the elders in any way I can to make sure that vision occurs. I'm going to serve the worship team any way I can to make sure they have everything they need to serve God in their vision. I'm going to do everything I can to help the Sunday school teachers. You know, it's why I try to go around every day, every Sunday, and tell them thank you, because I am thankful. We couldn't do what we do without people volunteering in other realms. Does that make any sense? So when you're following Jesus, you understand that even in a position of authority, we're called to serve. We're called to sacrifice. We're called to live as if their life depended on it. And so as you go out into the real world and as you run into people, I'll just use Panera because I go there once in a while. I go in there every week, and if you follow me on Facebook, please don't worry about it. It's not a bad thing. But I was in Panera long enough that you can redeem your drinks every 2 hours. Well, I had got my second one because I was about ready to go, and the manager brings it over and goes, here you go, Gary. Yeah, they know me there. But anyways, when I go to Panera, I was challenged. I spend time in there. How many times do I try to serve the people that are taking care of me? Don't ask the answer to that question because you're probably not going to be happy with your pastor. But I was thinking, if we took the notion of saying, listen, everywhere I go in every situation, no matter where I'm at in that pyramid, I'm going to try to serve the people that are around me and do everything I can to make sure that they're able to serve in their capacity. That's our challenge, to live in this upside down world. And when you start to look at life that way, like Jesus is saying, I came to serve, not to be served. Yes, he was going to save the world, but he realized that he was going to build into that next group of men that when he came back from the life and they go, oh, now I get it. And if you read the book of Acts, which we'll be studying later this year, you're going to be like, phew, now I get it. It begins to change everything. So what is our response? When our assumptions are expressed, exposed, and then eradicated, what are we to do? Well, today my prayer is that maybe your assumptions are redefined just a little bit. Are we living a life that is surrendered? You know, I think of Jesus again in the Garden of Gethsemane. He'd done everything perfect. He got to that point and what did he say? God, if there's any other way, please, one more time, please let this be taken from me. But then his next phrase is what's so incredible, but not my will, but yours. And so my prayer for you is that as you examine assumptions in your life, examine what it means to follow Jesus where you're at right now, are we living surrendered? Are we living the way that he's called us to live, serving rather than being the one served? Let Jesus, as I like to say, wreck your expectations. Don't come in with any and just say, Jesus, clear me out and open my eyes today. As the worship team comes, again, I'll ask you that question. What assumptions in your life have missed the mark? What need eradicated and redefined? Here is the truth. We can think and live and do things that we think brings us close to Jesus, but unless we fully surrender to him, we're missing the point. And as we get ready to sing this song is a perfect fitting. This is why we serve Jesus, because he is worthy of it all. So, worship team.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's message. If you want further information about Grace Community Church, you can visit us at gccofalliance.org. Also note, the video for this message, for this sermon, is linked in the details below. Have a great day.